You are listening to Love Sport Breakfast with myself, Richard Lee, and Patrick Christie. Only one place to start. Boris Johnson is the new leader of the Conservative Party and will officially become the Prime Minister this afternoon. The former Mayor of London has promised to energise the country and leave the EU on October 31st. In sport, Newcastle have smashed their transfer record for the second time in 6 months. Hoffenheim's Joel Linton has joined the club less than a week into the head coach Steve Bruce's tenure. The fee is due to be £40 million. The Brazilian forward has signed a 6-year deal. The first ever test between England and Ireland gets underway this morning at Lord's. The home of cricket will be bathed in sunshine for the entire 4 days, with Jason Roy and Ollie Stone making their England test debuts. And Britain's Duncan Scott won bronze at the 200 metre freestyle at the World Aquatics Championship, but drew fury from the gold medalist Sun Yang, who the Brit refused to share a podium with. Sun Yang served a 3-month ban in 2014 after testing positive for a banned stimulant. This is Love Sport Breakfast with myself, Richard Lee, and Patrick Christie's. How the devil are we, Patrick?
Very well, Rich. It's a big day in the political history front today. Absolutely. We've got Boris Johnson as our new Prime Minister, or at least he will be officially in a few hours' time. He beat Jeremy Hunt in the Tory leadership race. Boris managed to get 66.4% of the vote, 92,153 to be precise, compared to Jeremy Hunt's 46,656. And Boris lit up the conference centre yesterday with his speech, in which he said that he wanted to deliver Brexit, unite the country and defeat Jeremy Corbyn. He made a little joke saying, actually, people say that maybe that isn't the best acronym to use because it spells dud. But he said that they forgot the E on the end, to energise Britain. And that's his main motto here. He wants to instil a little bit of optimism. He wants to instil a little bit of public spirit, that kind of we will fight them on the beaches mentality and talk Britain up, not down.
OK, your thoughts towards this?
Well, look, Britain, for my money, Britain is needed for a very, very long time. A Prime Minister who is willing to unashamedly talk about the positives of this country, what we have to offer, as opposed to going into their shell and being like damage limitation and pointing out all the negatives, almost being ashamed, really, of how good Britain could be. And, you know, I think now, finally, we have a politician and a Prime Minister who's willing to do that, who's willing to say, look, you know, we are positive about this and let's have a go. We've got a lot of good people in this country. We've got a lot of great skills, and it's probably time that we started talking about that.
Yeah. In terms of his strategy, I know there was a bit of talk about him potentially calling a general election very early on. Is that likely?
He may well do. I know Nigel Farage wants him to. Nigel Farage has been speaking earlier on saying that essentially what Boris could do is call an early general election, win a stonking majority, and then he can rush whatever he wants through Parliament, and it would give him a huge public mandate. Because that's one of the big criticisms at the minute, that there are 159,000 people have voted to choose our next Prime Minister, because that's the number of Tory members that voted, 85% of Tory members. So it's not even 100% of just the Conservatives in this country that have elected our new Prime Minister. So he does really need to go to the country at some point, but he needs to get his own cabinet in order first. He needs to sort them out. The rumours are at the moment that Priti Patel, who's a staunch Brexiteer, she's also, obviously, a female, and importantly in this context as well, an ethnic minority, because Boris Johnson wants to stack his cabinet full of Brexiteers, women as well, and ethnic minorities, to make it the most diverse cabinet that this country has ever had. So Priti Patel apparently has been lined up for Home Secretary, and Sajid Javid could be moved from Home Secretary there to Chancellor, is what we're hearing. However, Jeremy Hunt has put a little bit of a spanner in the works, potentially anyway, saying that he won't accept a demotion from his current role as Foreign Secretary. But to be honest with you, he's been quite a good Foreign Secretary, and I would have thought Boris Johnson might be wise to keep him there.
OK, so in terms of general consensus, it looked likely for quite a while that he would, of course, take this role. His initial impression yesterday overall was pretty good then, yeah?
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? You know, with the best will in the world, Theresa May, I feel a little bit sorry for her in a lot of respects. She's quite an awkward type, and she probably wasn't always the most comfortable just interacting with human beings, frankly, let alone giving speeches.
And dancing.
And dancing as well, yes. Lest we forget. It's made me feel quite good about myself, actually, watching her dancing.
Yes.
Because, like, she's the only person I know who I can legitimately say, I'm better than you, you know. So, the thing is, if you really think about it, Theresa May, whenever she gave a speech, whenever she made a joke, everyone was like, Whereas with Boris, people are off their seats, you know. People are there, and it was energising. Yesterday when he gave his speech, there was a bit of a goosebumps moment, but people have spotted something. Eagle-eyed viewers have spotted something about Boris Johnson's speech yesterday. He was stood on his tiptoes throughout behind the lectern.
Really?
Some kind of power thing. So the Tories have got form for this. It's called the Tory power pose.
Right. Right.
So George Osborne used to do it, where he'd have his legs quite far apart, but his feet, his toes pointing in, if that makes sense. So he's kind of got quite a big gait on him. Sajid Javid, of course, did it as well when he became Home Secretary. Now Boris has stood on his tiptoes to make him seem taller, more statesmanlike.
Mm, I used to do that in photos, club photos.
Right.
Yeah, normally because the goalkeepers were like 6 inches taller than me and it was a little bit embarrassing. So I would often get on my tiptoes or ask if I could have a little block underneath just to make it look like I wasn't a tiny little goalkeeper.
And then one morning you woke up and you were Prime Minister.
There you go.
You know, and that's how we do it. Absolutely. Well, look, just in terms of how things will unfold today, Rich. So at midday, Theresa May will face her final Prime Minister's questions. She'll then return to Downing Street to make her last statement after being clapped out by staff. Which is ironic, isn't it? Because she is a bit clapped out. She will travel to Buckingham Palace to tender her resignation and recommend a successor. Imagine if she just doesn't recommend Boris.
Yeah.
Honestly, Lizzie, I wouldn't go for this job. Anyway. And then Boris Johnson will be summoned to the palace, where the Queen will invite him to form a government. Mm. In quite a terrifying image, that, isn't it, really? Arriving outside number 10 at about 4 p.m. today will be his official car, and then he'll address the media. And then he'll be clapped in to number 10 and go into military briefings and then check this out, Rich, before writing the, quote, letters of last resort that describe actions that take place in event of a nuclear strike.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice way to finish the day.
Yeah, exactly.
We've actually got a little bit of audio from Boris's acceptance speech.
I read in my Financial Times this morning that there are no incoming leader has ever faced such a daunting set of circumstances, it said. Well, I look at you this morning and I ask myself, do you look daunted? Do you feel daunted? I don't think you look remotely daunted to me. And I think that we know that we can do it and that the people of this country are trusting in us to do it, and we know that we will do it. And we know the mantra of the campaign that has just gone by. In case you've forgotten it, you probably have. It is deliver Brexit, unite the country and defeat Jeremy Corbyn. And that is what we're going to do. We're going to defeat Jeremy Corbyn. And I know some wag was already pointed out that deliver, unite and defeat was not the perfect acronym for an election campaign, since unfortunately it spells dud. But they forgot the final E, my friends. E for energise. And I say to all the doubters, dude, we are going to energise the country. We're going to get Brexit done on October the 31st. We're going to take advantage of all the opportunities that it will bring in a new spirit of can-do. And we are once again going to believe in ourselves and what we can achieve. And like some slumbering giant, we are going to rise and ping off the guy ropes of self-doubt and negativity with better education, better infrastructure, more police, fantastic full fibre broadband sprouting in every household. We are going to unite this amazing country and we are going to take it forward. I thank you all very much for the incredible honour that you have just done me. I will work flat out from now on with my team that I will build, I hope, in the next few days to repay your confidence. But in the meantime, the campaign is over and the work begins.
It's a good speech.
Well, it was a good speech, and it's the type of speech I think this country needed. Look, the jury is out as to how good Boris Johnson will be. He's certainly been a Prime Minister in waiting for a very, very long time. And everyone that really knows Boris, so Sebastian Shakespeare is a fantastic columnist at the Daily Mail. He used to go out with Rachel Johnson, Boris Johnson's sister. She is a Liberal Democrat. You'll have seen her on Sky's The Pledge. She's also, I believe, been in Celebrity Big Brother, I think, as well, which, you know, fair play. So everyone that's met him says that when he was young, he was always asked, well, what do you want to be? And he said, world king. He wants to be world king. And he's always been a big believer, apparently, in some sense of fate or destiny. And this, for Boris Johnson, will feel like that now. But as he rightly said at the end there, you know, it's time to go to work. This country has got a lot on its plate at the moment. And he's made potentially a little bit of a rod for his own back by saying that he will definitely get us out of Europe by October 31st. But I believe we now have Asa Bennett on the line, the commissioning editor for the Daily Telegraph. Asa, thank you very much for fitting us in. I believe you're currently in a taxi on your way to Sky News, so cheers for fitting us in.
Oh, dipping around. A busy day for Borismus. What can you say?
Absolutely. Well, look, just give us a lowdown on what your take is on what happened yesterday and some of the challenges facing Boris going forward.
Well, look, when you said that he put a rod up his own back on Brexit, that's actually a sign of his iron commitment to Brexit. And that's the iron commitment that made him win. Ahead, as he was giving a very characteristically Borisian speech yesterday about how he was the dude who would, you know, deliver, unite, defeat and energise the party. Yes, I remember it well. but, of course, the curious thing, having watched it, as I'm sure we all did, was when he tried to do a classic sort of panto-ish line, the call and response of saying, you know, are we daunted? Yeah. Expecting them to go, no! And they kind of didn't. They fell silent. It's sort of a kind of mutter, you know, well, you don't look daunted to me. And I think it's, there is a certain recognition that, you know, God, you know, they've got one step closer. They've got closure on that front. But my word, they, at the very least now, we have the poetic justice of Mr. Brexit being responsible in the seat and having to try and deliver Brexit.
Yes, well, that's it, isn't it? Do you think there is any chance of him getting a new deal before October 31st, or is it no deal Britain now?
I think it's the EU is going to say, look, the withdrawal agreement is really nice. Can you try again? We'll give it some good garnish, present it, have a pretty bow attached around it. He's obviously going to try and push back a bit. There's going to be a bit of a tussle, of course, in which we're going to also test the theory, finally, that if you really are prepared to walk away, as Boris tried to make clear with the do-or-die-come-what-may deadline, then the EU's resolve quakes. But the thing is, then the EU has a lot to lose as well if it throws Ireland under the bus so summarily. So obviously, I think it's just going to be a lot of language about addenda, political declarations. And after all, he says, you know, he needs a new withdrawal agreement. So maybe a new withdrawal agreement means it being reprinted in a different colour with his name on the front. I don't know. It sort of depends what you mean by a new withdrawal agreement. So I think it's this. Prepare for a few months of fantastic pedantry on words, as we've had to do with Theresa May, finding the difference, splitting the hairs, in order to see how different things are. But what is key, they'll be presented in a different manner because it's Boris, it's Mr. Brexit, and then maybe Brexiters will trust him more on this. He'll be able to upsell it, he'll be able to sell it with verve.
Yes, well, there you go. Now, yesterday, of course, he was joined in the crowd by Stanley Johnson, his father, Rachel Johnson, his sister, and Joe Johnson, his brother. They're a power family, really, aren't they? But there was no sign of Carrie Symons, who is supposedly his latest squeeze.
Girlfriend.
Yes. Yeah. What's the story there? I mean, are they still together? Are we expecting her to move into number 10, do you think? And do you know anything about her in terms of what she's really like as a person?
Well, I think obviously you come from the starting point that Boris is acutely protective of his private life. I mean, his immediate sibling and father is a different story, given how much they thrust themselves in front of the public eye. But the sort of incipient emerging relationship with Carrie, I think he's trying to be very sort of sensitive and protective of this, because obviously he is going to be then the first Prime Minister since Edward Heath to walk in without an obvious first wife, you know, sort of a first husband, even in the case of Maggie, by his side. And so I think it's that Carrie does recognise that she'd be somewhat of a distraction with this kind of, oh, what is she then? Oh, is she the girlfriend? Is she the, you know, bride-to-be? All that kind of drama you see in the features pages of the papers. So I think she may be leaving him to it for that, you know, seeming to be a bachelor for the sake of the cameras. But obviously, she may all then be snuck in from through the back door as such. Obviously, this will be fast-changing pageantry, so, you know, there may be some dramatic change. But I suspect if they want it to be Boris's day, after yesterday's speech to the Tory leadership masses, then it would pivot and address the nation.
All right, Aidan, look, just lastly, we know that Brexit is the main cause, as it were, for Boris Johnson. Just what are some of the other key things that we're expecting him to do? I mean, I know he's pledged, for example, more police.
Absolutely, and more investment for defence, and very much lower taxes, lower regulation, as far as you can see. I think it's the idea is all to show that there's more to him than Brexit. But I fear and suspect that, just like Theresa, he's going to be trying really hard, his damnedest, to deliver them, but Parliament's going to bog him down. So until he gets Brexit done, then he can start to get things going. I suppose one advantage is that he's probably going to work on this. Anything that he can deliver without having to pass new laws on crime and spending, then he's going to go for it. But as it stands, you know, if he's going to pass a new law for it, it's going to be very tricky indeed.
Asa, thank you very, very much for giving us the time, especially so early in the day. We do appreciate it here at Love Sport. Asa Bennett.
Full pleasure. Thank you.
Commissioning Editor at the Daily Telegraph. Now, Rich, look, you'll be the first to admit you're not a political animal.
Not an animal.
You're an elite-level athlete, right?
And I was.
And there's a difference there.
Yes, small.
Now, what's your take on the current political situation? You've heard Asa there talking about Boris and what we can expect. Are you worried? Do you look at Boris Johnson and go, oh, I really wish you weren't leading us?
No, do you know what? And I give Boris a bit of stick, more for his physical appearance, because, again, you do mention the fact that I was an athlete. And
he's a blancmange.
Yeah, interesting look. Really interesting shape that he's got going on. Which, no, look, where I... And I know I do this in general everyday life, is, of course, you'll make certain judgments on people in terms of how they live, and I guess it doesn't look like he lives particularly well, which is a concern. But in terms of him as a character, I can understand why people warm to him. I know we like mess around in terms of his mumbling sort of ways and what have you, but he is quite... There is something quite attractive about that. There's something that makes you warm to him. And listen to that speech yesterday. It is a passionate speech. And you do need someone with passion that has the right ideas moving forward. And in fairness, from what I understand, he is obviously incredibly intelligent. And a lot of his ideas do seem like solid ideas. And if he's able to come through with them, and certainly with Brexit, it sounds like we need someone who's got that kind of power in order to make something happen.
You know when you said you make a judgment on people based on their lifestyle?
Don't ask me about you, please.
What about me?
Love Sport. This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Some footage of a good win for Chelsea against Barcelona. Tammy Abraham's getting a very, very good goal. Of course, given the number 9 shirt by Chelsea now, which is... ordinarily, that would be a very, very interesting thing. But we did run through the list of Chelsea number 9s, and it's not the most illustrious list.
No. Kesman.
Yeah.
What's his face? Crespo.
Yep.
Now, Crespo did look a little bit like a character out of Gladiator, I thought. Very, very strong, powerful jaw.
Fantastic.
Which was actually a lot more strong and powerful than any of his shots when he was in the Premier League, because he barely scored, didn't he? But, you know, there we are. But, yeah, all the clubs, as we know, are obviously on pre-season at the moment. Some are going better than others. Manchester United are actually doing all right. They do look quite dangerous at the moment. And you do feel if they can bring in a couple of other players, then maybe, just maybe, they might at least be able to compete for maybe fourth place. Anyway, Arsenal, they're doing okay as well, although Unai Emery has already written off 16 days before the season starts. He's already written off the fact that Arsenal could win the league and a few others as well. But we are joined, aren't we, by a very special guest, Rich?
We are indeed. We're going to talk a bit of Chelsea. So goals from Tammy Abraham and Ross Barkley gave Frank Lampard's Chelsea an impressive 2-1 win against Barcelona in a pre-season friendly in Japan. Abraham opened the scoring with a neat first half finish after rounding the goalkeeper and substitute Barkley curled in the second late on. We're joined now by former Chelsea captain and manager John Hollins. Morning, John.
Good morning.
Good
That's
morning.
Good news. 2-1. Yes, get in there.
Indeed. Do you know how much we talk about this a lot, how much you can read into pre-season? I guess one of the interesting parts of yesterday was that Tammy Abraham has been given the number 9 shirt and he looked very good. It's certainly an excellent finish for the goal.
Yes, he does. And that, whoever puts that number 9 shirt on, guaranteed to get goals. And what a very good start that is for him.
It is. We were running through the list of number 9s, though, and they've been a bit of a mixed bag. So they've had some random number 9s in recent years, like the likes of Steve Sidwell being a good example, who was definitely not a number 9. And they've, obviously, the last couple of years, with Morata in particular, and Higuain, who came in and wore the number 9 shirt. Tammy Abraham, though, he has scored goals pretty much everywhere he's been. Of course, Bristol City, and last season, Aston Villa. Is it, I say, make or break? But I guess this is the big question, right? It's one thing doing it for Aston Villa in the Championship. Doing it for Chelsea in the Premier League is a very different beast.
It is, but he is a good boy. He's a good player in terms of making people turn round. He will run because he's got the opportunity to do this. He's got the chance of running people and centre-halves, and centre-halves will be saying, oh, but he goes all over the place. Try and stop him. Get in there. And he will produce goals. He'll try and be on the end of anything. And I think he might at the beginning start trying to try too hard, but that is getting experience, and you're getting experience in the best league in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, you've actually had quite a similar path to Super Frank Lampard, haven't you? You became Chelsea manager kind of just after you finished playing, and then you also, I believe, are just below him on number of appearances as well for Chelsea, so not a bad effort there. I mean, how do you make, or what do you make, I should say, of his performances so far as manager, the way he's gone about his business, some of the, you know, the things he's been saying at various press conferences and stuff like that? How do you kind of evaluate his start to life as Chelsea boss?
Well, the thing is, he's a level-headed guy. He doesn't do anything rash. I would say he's definitely a player's man. Having played all these games, and he will get the respect. But the thing is, actually, Frank is actually now starting to learn different things and different ways of playing and different workings, and. With Jody Morris, Jody will have, I think, the pull of every young player in Chelsea's, whether they're abroad, whether they're here, they're here, get there, and he will test all the ones that I would believe Jody Morris would say, I like him, I can do with him, you know, and it will be a learning lesson for both. Because this is a big, big league, and not a bad start. That just a good little start there. You think, well, it's only Barcelona playing away, and did they try hard enough? Did they do this? Did they do that? That's experience. That's a good experience, and that's a good one with the number nine. Sit number nine scores goals. Good start.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, it's I guess for confidence, if nothing else. It looks as well that they're close to reaching a contract agreement with Callum Hudson-Odoi, who of course was rumoured to be off to Bayern Munich for a long period of time, but it does seem now with Frank Lampard as manager, that does seem like a really good fit, and he looks like a really exciting talent.
The way he's played, the games he's come in, like, let's just say, the end of last season, he came in and was a breath of fresh air, getting early balls, whipping balls into the box and making sure people, you know, centre forwards like that. They want to be in there. They want to be near post, far post. If one, you know, they can actually get sort of, I would say, on the end of most of them. And he's a very talented young player.
Indeed. Okay, great stuff. Look, thank you very much, as always. Do appreciate you coming on, John. Great stuff. John Hollins there, former Chelsea manager and captain.
Chelsea legend, mate.
He is Chelsea legend.
Chelsea hero.
Indeed. No, some interesting thoughts there as well. I think it's, and that's it, probably more than anything, the confidence they'll get from beating Barcelona.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's, okay, yeah, it's pre-season friendly, of course, but actually it is a young Chelsea team and they haven't had the best results pre-season so far. So to actually beat Barcelona in the manner that they have, and Barcelona had the majority of their players out as well.
Yeah, well, exactly. I'm just looking at John Hollins' managerial record here, right? So Chelsea, it's where he started. Good start. Yeah. Well done. 1985-1988, not a bad run. Mm. And then he went to Queen's Park Rangers. Fine, good. Swansea, good club. Rochdale, much worse. Stockport County's getting worse. Stockport Tiger Star.
Ooh.
What the heck is that?
Not too
Stockport
sure.
Stockport Tiger Star, and then Crawley Town, followed ultimately by Weymouth.
Right.
So...
gradual...
So, I mean, bearing in mind that his career has mirrored Frank Lampard's.
Yeah.
Okay, so Frank Lampard he has made, like, about five, I think, more appearances than John Hollins. John Hollins is, I believe, fifth on the list. You know, then he went straight into management.
Yeah.
Then he went straight into, you know, well, then he did that. And then Frank Lampard is basically going to do the same thing, isn't he? So you could see him going from Chelsea to QPR to Swansea to Rochdale to Stockport County to Stockport Tiger Star before finishing in Weymouth.
Before Ashford Town.
That sounds like a tour of all the worst stag do venues, doesn't it? Where are you going for your stag do, Gary? Weymouth! It's going to be mental!
It is indeed. We've got some weather and travel. Kieran, for the first time this morning. Good morning, Kieran.
Good morning, Rich. Good morning, Patrick. How morning. Are we this morning?
Radiant.
Are you wearing shorts, Patrick? You said, you know, I have not. I can't see your bottom half, thankfully, from here.
Right. No, I'm not wearing shorts today. I didn't think the world was ready.
Well, you probably should get prepared, because today there are some weather warnings being issued in London. Did you hear the thunderstorms last night? Because that seems to be what's going to affect the early morning travel, is some power outages potentially because of the thunderstorms last night. Power cuts could be occurring this morning.
They were extraordinary. I can't believe you didn't wake up.
Nothing really wakes me up. Once we got broken into, not where I'm living now, but we got broken into and I didn't wake up.
Right.
Yeah, I sleep through it.
Someone came in, broke in,
yep.
And you just slept right. Didn't just interrupt your sleep.
Just robbed
whatsoever.
Me. Just robbed me blind.
Took everything.
Took just cling me out.
Even took the duvet.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah.
That dignity, that went.
That went a long time
Self-respect,
ago.
Self-respect, gone.
Again,
they nicked that.
Again,
absolutely.
I didn't know you had that to begin with. I don't want to talk about the weather too often because I know it's not the most interesting. But last night, genuinely, my whole room just lit up for, over and over and over. Just the brightest light. It was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I am like Patrick, I must admit. I sleep through anything. I didn't wake up last night. So I don't know whether it was where you live, Rich. I don't know, but, you know.
It might have had something to do with the fact that I actually just parked my car outside your bedroom window and I was just flicking the lights over and over again.
That does make much more sense.
Shouting things like, screw you, Rich!
Well, it's going to be highs of 30 degrees for the England and Irish cricketers. Obviously, not potentially used to playing in England in such intensity. Obviously, England play in Asia quite a lot where it could be very humid and very hot.
I guess a good thing with our English cricket team is that a lot of them come from warmer climates. So actually might benefit.
Very good point, Rich. Very good point. It's very South African weather out there.
It should be great.
This morning. And on the tubes, we have severe delays on the London Overground between Willesden Junction and Clapham Junction due to an earlier faulty Southern train. And your tickets will be accepted on the buses if you fancy a lovely road journey in rush hour traffic.
Fantastic.
Great stuff. We were talking a bit of Chelsea before that. You touched on the fact that pre-season, and we're talking about the big six, Arsenal coming out in the papers today, Unai Emery saying that they've got no chance of the title, which, let's be honest, is true, but you don't really want that coming from your manager a couple of weeks before the season even starts. Manchester United have had a reasonably good pre-season from what I've seen.
Yeah, they have. Can we just take a moment to appreciate the fluctuating weight of Mauricio Pochettino, please?
Sure.
So Poch does this, right? So right now he's peak Poch.
Okay.
So he's podgy Poch.
Yeah.
Right, so he'll almost balloon. And you can see it really around the jawline area, which is nice, I find. And he stores quite a bit around the midriff area. And then over the course of the season, he gets thinner and thinner and thinner.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's stress or whatever. But I just enjoy it. I just enjoy watching it, the cycle of Poch. Because I was waiting. I'd not really seen him that much this pre-season. And now, oh, there he is. There he is. There's a lot of Poch.
He's had an incredible summer. Do you think it's a case that the season finishes and he's like a scrawny little thing after such a stressful season and they just fatten him up for 3 or 4 weeks, just eat as much as you possibly can and then come back for pre-season nice and plump and then we know we can get another year out of you? Is that how it works?
Like a goose.
He's just a hamster. He's just storing as much food as he possibly can to get him through the next 12 months.
Yeah, I've just got this beautiful image of, like, the second that the season finishes, he just sits down for a tapas mezze and that lasts the whole off-season. It's just him. It's just, like, right, 15 litres of Rioja and then just an assortment of Spanish food.
Yeah, you're going home, Poch. No, got a bed here. I'll be fine. I'll be fine. Just get the next meal ready.
Did I say stop? Hey? Yeah. Did I say? I'll tell you when I'm full.
Have you been to, what's the restaurant where you get a choice? You can either have it green or red. And as long as it's green, they just keep bringing the food.
It's the Brazilian one.
Of course, it is.
No, it's good. But to be honest with you, Rich, that's my idea of heaven, really.
Yeah.
Just endless Brazilian meat served to me on a platter.
Delicious. Let's talk about Tottenham, because Tottenham, of course, going into next season, didn't work out for them in the Champions League final, but they have signed Ndombele, which is, of course, quite exciting for a lot of Tottenham fans. And they're going in for their first full season in the new stadium as well.
Yep.
New signing. It is pretty good times for Tottenham at the moment.
Well, it is, capped off by the fact that Harry Kane scored a wonder goal from just inside the Juventus half in the pretty much final minute of their game against Juve to make sure that Spurs won 3-2. Their next game is against Real Madrid. You look at that and you think they've got a decent little pre-season here. If they can hold their own against Juventus and Real Madrid. Harry Kane, of course, has said that there's no excuse for not winning silverware this year. And I think that is it. Look, it's obviously very, very difficult to win things, you know, otherwise everyone would be doing it. But Spurs now do have to do something. Poch will always have this hanging over his head like the constant sword of Damocles. You know, you've not won anything, Pot. You've not really got us anything. And that Spurs trophy cabinet is just vacant at the minute, isn't it? It's empty. They're renting out an Airbnb. I was thinking, there's a family in there at the minute.
Yeah, just trying to make the most of it. Dele Alli apologised for his holiday drinking session.
Why?
The quote. Well, the quote, it's not funny.
It is.
I can't say it's funny because it's not.
It was.
It was important. I had some downtime. I'm 23 years old. I'm going to have some fun with my friends as long as I'm being professional and doing the right things.
Oh, come on. Right, look, there's a difference, OK, between you getting absolutely off your nut on the 2 weeks off that you get a year, you know, spending your many millions, doing whatever. You know, what he did was get absolutely battered at his girlfriend's birthday party and he was pictured passed out on a sunbed and getting helped off to his room. Fine. Go to Magaluf now. Go there today. Pick any hotel at random right now, this second. Just point at any single human being and they will be in a worse state than Dele Alli. Look, as you know, Rich, I do have issues with footballers behaving like children and being rather stupid. That wasn't one of them. He's 23 years old. He got battered on holiday. Well done, lad.
Yeah. Fair point. Do you understand why he's come out and apologised?
No, and this is what annoys me, right? Well, you know, this is where Dele Alli should learn from Donald Trump. Never apologise. Double down. What Dele Alli needs to do now is never say sorry, go out and get even more smashed tonight.
I know you've adopted this strategy with your girlfriend, the never apologising double down. How's that working out?
Yeah, really well. She's actually going away for 10 days on her own, starting from today. So,
congratulations.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
Britain's Duncan Scott won bronze in the 200 metres freestyle at the World Aquatics Championship, but drew fury from gold medalist Sun Yang, who the Brit refused to share a podium with. Sun Yang served a three-month ban in 2014 after testing positive for a banned substance. And I'm pleased to say we're very fortunate to have Sharon Davis on the line to discuss exactly that. Morning, Sharon.
Good morning, all the way from South Korea. Oh. A bit hot and sweaty, but not as nice as the UK is, by the sounds of things.
I know, we're having one of those days where we're comparing ourselves to the rest of the world and how we're actually hotter than most places, which is quite cool. But you are, you're in South Korea, you're there. How is it?
It's not as sunny as at home. It's very warm, I have to say. We didn't have the big fireworks and the big thunderstorms that you had last night. But then I'm stuck in a swimming pool most of the time, so I don't even get to see the weather. So there you go.
Okay, all right. So now, look, there was a little bit of controversy yesterday, wasn't there? Do you want to just run our listeners through what happened, what the reasons behind it were?
Yeah, so it is a little bit complicated because it goes back quite a long time. Sun Yang is a very famous Chinese swimmer who's been very successful over the 400, 800 and 200 metres freestyle. And he was defending champion in this particular event. And he has served bans in the past. But not only that, he also has a reputation for just not being a particularly nice person. For example, I was in Kazan at the World Championships 4 years ago, and he had a tussle with a young lady in the warm-up because she wanted him to keep over. As all of us know, when we swim around in circles in lanes, which is exactly what international swimmers do when they warm up as well, she asked him if he could keep over, and he decided to kind of beat her around the head with a paddled float when he was trying to do his warm-up. So right. At the same meet, he then decided to kick a few lockers in, and then he didn't turn up for the final. So he has a bit of a reputation and he's not terribly liked, but big reason why Duncan did what he did last night on the actual rostrum was because at the moment we have a CAF official case in sort of pending, which is going to be reviewed I think sometime in September, and this is from the end of last year when he was dope testers turned up and tested him, took some vial of blood away. He wasn't very happy with the process, so he smashed the vial of blood with a hammer. And instead of FINA saying that's not correct, that's not right behavior, obviously it's the same as missing a test because ultimately that test never went in, they just basically pardoned him yet again. And obviously then WADA said, no, this isn't good enough. We're going to challenge this. We're going to put this to CAS. And instead of sorting it out pre these World Championships, they postponed it until after the World Championships, which is ludicrous. So obviously every race that he's in, the people that he's beating, they won't get their medals if he's found guilty, which hopefully he will be. And so, you know, the swimmers are trying to voice their unhappiness about the situation.
This is crazy. How does this all look on FINA?
Ridiculous, to be honest with you. I mean, FINA, unfortunately, were one of the organisations when the IOC shirked the responsibility of excluding the whole Russian team from Rio, decided it was perfectly OK for the Russians to compete in the swimming pool. So we have people that have been serving two doping bans in Rio and people that serve two doping bans that are still competing here. they need to clean their house up. You know, they really, really do. And the summers are just fed up with it. So the only way they can voice their issue is in front of the World Press when they go up onto the blocks. And so that's what Matt Horton did in the final of the 400 metres freestyle when he came second. And that's what Duncan did last night in the 200.
Yeah, well, look, absolutely. And somebody else who slightly waded into it was Adam Peaty, of course, our record-breaking swimming supremo, who just said, look, I don't know what this guy's doing here. It was as simple as that, and I think that seems to be the point that everyone's making, isn't it? Why is he here? But look, let's not let that...
He shouldn't be here. It should have been sorted out before these championships. That's probably what most people are upset about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, let's not let this take the gloss off what has been a sensational meet so far for Adam Peaty. I mean, the guy just keeps getting better and better. I believe I'm right in saying that as of yesterday, he now has the fastest 14 times in the men's breaststroke 100 metres, which is astonishing, isn't
mad?
It? Yeah. How good
absolutely.
Is he? Go on, Sharon, sorry. How good is he?
He's second in front of anybody else. You know, that's the thing that most people don't quite understand and quite realise, the difference that he's beating everybody by. So, for example, that 200 freestyle that we were just been talking about, the eight finalists were all within 0.8 of each other, the eight finalists, you know, whereas Adam is one whole second plus in front of the next person. So he's just an extraordinary athlete. He's dominated now the 100 metres breaststroke for the last 5 years. He has been beaten in the 50 by Cameron Berg from South Africa at the Commonwealth Games. And that's what he's got tonight, is the final of the 50. But he's qualified fastest. He's a good 0.5 in front of the next person. And it's really whether he breaks the world record. Now, what often happens in breaststroke is that you start to, if you're not careful, snatch the water when you try too hard. And so that's the only thing that we have to be a little bit aware of. But everybody in the race will be doing the same thing, you know. And Adam is such an expert, a calm, cool customer. He's a lovely guy to be around as well. He's a wonderful ambassador for Britain and for British swimming. He talks to all of the media. He's always got time for everybody.
He's got to have something wrong with him. There's got to be something wrong with him. He can't be flawless.
What have you got? Let me have a think about it. Can't think of anything. Nothing comes to mind right now.
The perfect human. It's hard to. Of course, it's hard. We've got some fantastic athletes at the moment, fantastic sportsmen at the moment in Britain. Where does he rank at the moment in terms of his achievements, what he's doing and continuing to do? Because we were talking yesterday on the show that he is very much out on his own, and how hard it must be to motivate yourself at times when you're that much better than everybody else. Like, what is the next step for him? Where does he rank in terms of Great Britain's at the moment?
Well, I mean, if you take ESPN, which is the sort of big American sports station, they rank him as one of the top 10 sportsmen of all sports in the world.
Wow.
So we don't really, in the UK, give him the credit that he really deserves, I don't think. But he is phenomenal. He totally dominates. He has a wonderful coach called Mel Marshall, who was an ex-swimmer. She was not expected, but we were hoping that she was going to win the gold medal way back in Athens in 2004, and unfortunately she didn't do that. So she knows what it feels like to be on the other side. She's been his coach for the last 10 years. He's got a lovely support structure with his family. He's a great team member. And the lovely thing that happens for us as Team Great Britain is he swims at the beginning of the program. So he tends to pass his confidence and his success onto the rest of the team, which is wonderful. I mean, our men's team at the moment, with the likes of Duncan Scott and James Guy, we've got Max Lichfield coming in the 400 IM, who I heavily tip. We've got a very exciting mixed relay tonight, which Adam will play a big part in as well. So he's got his 50 final, and later on in the programme, he's got that relay, so we're all going to be shouting in that. So he passes that on, you know, and our men's team at the moment are very successful. It's just great. It rubs off, that sort of confidence on everybody.
Indeed. And just got to have a quick word on this time next year. In fact, I believe it's a year to the day today. Of course, the Olympics 2020 in Tokyo. How are we looking? How are we lining up?
Yeah, we're looking in great shape, to be honest with you. We've got quite a few youngsters that are coming through, which are obviously always improving. Other countries are doing exactly the same though, so it's very hard to predict exactly where we're going to be. I think that I would be a fool if I didn't, you know, bet my house on Adam next year, because I think he's really in amazing shape. There is no 50 breaststroke, unfortunately, in the programme for next year, so he will have to concentrate wholeheartedly on the 100 metres and on that mixed relay, which is part of the Olympic programme for the first time ever. And I do very quickly want to mention that Gary Hunt has just won the high diving, which is the most sensational sport, which we have here at the Worlds, which unfortunately is not in the Olympic programme, but it's for crazy men. You know, they've 20... 7 metres up in the sky and they dive into a little paddling pool. And he's just won us first this afternoon, literally an hour ago. So we're doing okay. We're doing okay.
We earned it. Just a quick word on, you touched on earlier about cleaning, like basically cleaning our own house, because we just had the 60th medalist from the London 2012 banned for doping, stripped of their medals. It is obviously a massive, massive problem, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a huge problem. And the difficulty is we always seem to be one step behind the drug takers. So they find new ways to avoid it, you know, new things that they could do, that they can manipulate the system, and then we eventually catch up with them, which is why at least if we're being able to hold samples on file, we can kind of retrospectively put things right. But that still doesn't give anybody back their moment. You know, if you've not been able to stand on the rostrum or pick up your gold medal, even if you're given it 5 years in the future, that can never be returned. All the rewards that you would have got, the moment of glory, you know, unfortunately, that's what's stolen away from somebody. So I know that Adam was talking about maybe treating drug cheats as, you know, as fraud, because nowadays people have a career out of being a successful sports person. And if you're not earning your living, then it's kind of a fraud of your living.
Yeah.
So maybe we need to go down that route, you know, and have better penalty system. I don't know. But yes, I mean, it's things like microdosing are terribly hard to detect because people take such small amounts that unless you catch them immediately after the microdose, the result is sort of dissipated over a few days and you don't find it.
No, absolutely. Sharon, really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And I hope everybody's staying cool and hydrated.
We will try absolutely. Our best. Great stuff. Sharon Davis there. Absolute legend.
Ewan Thomas said that he got presented with a gold medal from one of the Olympic Games he was at in a car park in Birmingham 8 years later.
Yeah, which is, and that's the point Sharon makes, is that it is that moment. You don't get that moment back. And interestingly, it is, because imagine, now look, Ewan's gone on and done okay for himself, but of course, if you do get that gold medal, it might be that you get that increased level of fame, which leads to increased opportunities. So that is a really interesting point that it could be treated as fraud, as theft.
It is theft. You know, I've not only have I robbed you of your greatest moment in terms of standing on the podium there with the gold medal around, you know, the national anthem blares out, you know, floods of tears, that kind of thing. You've missed out on all of that. Mm. You know, you've missed out on all the sponsorship deals that might have come after it. You've missed out on a life-changing opportunity. And also, it's completely rendered all of the hard, honest work that you've done totally irrelevant, hasn't it?
Absolutely. You make a good point for once, Mr. Christie.
Love sports. We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station. This is Love Sport.
He's now a Twitter user who claimed to be an anonymous championship footballer intending to come out as gay has appeared to reverse his decision after admitting he is not strong enough to do this, having previously declared his intention to hold a press conference on Wednesday where he would reveal his identity after a series of tweets that had detailed his experiences. The user, @footballergay, posted two messages on Tuesday evening before deleting the account, which has amassed more than 50,000 followers. Joining us now is LGBT rights campaigner Peter Tatchell. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
This is disappointing, isn't it? What, first and foremost, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, it may be true that this person has last minute got cold feet and didn't feel able to face a potential media storm. That could be true. But I'm really quite doubtful because he has been tweeting this for months. And you would have thought that if he had any sense of weakness and uncertainty that would have dawned on him some considerable time ago. It leads me to fear that this, all along this has been a gigantic hoax. And I think that's very, very bad and very, very wrong. And I think for a lot of LGBT plus people, they feel very badly let down.
Well, that's the bit that strikes me, is there was such a build-up that then to suddenly get, not cold feet, but like then to suddenly change your mind at the last minute doesn't quite add up. It seems, but then you wonder, well, then why? What's the point? No one actually knows who it is, or is it just somebody that thought, you know, maybe I suppose it's a bit of fun for a month. Let me see how much interest I can generate and probably getting a bit of a buzz off all the different followers that are coming in and the publicity that it's getting. Could it just be that?
Could we? Yes, could well be. That's my fear now. You know, I think to build this up and hype it up for so many weeks And then to let people down, that's a really, really bad move. And I just don't really think the explanation of not being strong enough is credible, because I think the person must have been fully aware of what he was planning, you know, a long, long time ago.
I think there's a wider issue here for me that stands out, and I'm going to pick your brains as to why you think this is the case. But look, roughly speaking, 1 in 10 people or so are a member of the LGBT plus community. Now, it just the law of, well, nature really dictates that across the Football League, all the tiers in our Football League here, right the way from Premiership right down to the Conference, some people will be gay. Why have we not got anyone coming out? Because I would have thought, right, looking aside from the fact that, you know, there's the role model argument, of course, you could be a role model to younger people as well. But also, look, let's take all the emotion out of it. It could potentially be a very lucrative thing for somebody as well in terms of sponsorship deals and stuff like that. Is there actually a problem here that we're overlooking? Is there in some kind of endemic homophobia in football that is stopping people from coming out?
Well, first, let me say that you are right. Statistically, about 10% of the population will have, you know, some significant or perhaps permanent same-sex experiences. So given that there are about 5,000 professional players across the whole of the UK, that would suggest that probably about 500 are gay or bisexual. Yet not one of them has come out. Not one. The only person who's ever come out was Justin Fashanu in 1990 when he was playing for Leighton Orient. But since then, nobody else ever has. And it just simply isn't plausible that there are no gay or bisexual players in the top tier of football. So the question is, yes, why aren't they coming out? Well, they may fear negative reactions from fans, but we know from the surveys taken, I think, by Stoke University that 75% of fans say they wouldn't care if a player in their team was gay. As long as he played well, that's all they're interested in. So that's pretty overwhelming. They may fear reactions from their teammates. But again, the experience of surveys of players show that most players do not care about fellow teammates' sexuality. That isn't an issue for them. And of course, finally, they may, as you suggest, perhaps be worried about sponsorship deals. But, you know, I don't think any major sponsor today would dare withdraw sponsorship from a player because they were gay. But the negative backlash would be so overwhelming. That would be totally counterproductive. And in fact, as you have suggested, it may well be the case that an openly gay player would get extra sponsorship, because he'd be seen as a novelty, a trailblazer, a change maker. And because of the publicity, that person will then attract more and more media interest. So it could be very conducive and positive for a company to sponsor him.
Look, if this does turn out to be a hoax, which I guess, look, we'll probably never know the truth is, unless in 15 years when this particular player retires from football and then says, actually, that was me, then who knows? Maybe we'll get proof that this was real or wasn't real. But if we do find out that this was a hoax and we find out who was behind it, what would you suggest needs to be done?
Well, I'm not sure that a lot can be done, except to say that it's a very bad move, you know, to build up people's hopes and expectations, you know, for young players, perhaps at school, who are thinking about a football career, for existing gay and bisexual players who'd hoped that this would be a groundbreaking moment that might perhaps encourage them to come out. It's obviously a huge, huge disappointment. And it just reinforces the idea there's something bad and shameful about being gay.
Peter, really appreciate your time this morning. That's Peter Tatchell there, LGBT rights campaigner, talking about the gay football account, which has been deleted last night. Obviously, we were expecting somebody, or we were expecting news today, but that won't be forthcoming.
Well, it was supposed to be, supposedly anyway. Peter, a championship player who was the age of 21, we believe, who was, you know, going to come out, basically, and be the first footballer of modern times to come out. And the fact is, they'd garnered 40,000 Twitter followers. It had been in the national press quite a lot, and today was supposed to be the day, and they've said that they're not feeling ready. If it's genuine, you have to absolutely respect that opinion. It is entirely, you know, anybody's choice as and when they come out. But, yeah, it's a sad day, really, in that respect.
Love Sport. Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.